Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common good, a common goal. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us an email or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are all archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to talk about planning for the future. And in a sense, we always are talking about planning for the future because we're talking about reaching a successful outcome, a successful goal that the group has set that they would like to achieve. And that's a thing in the future, right? Yeah. But let's talk about planning for that future this time. Mm-hmm. So the main question is, how can we? How can we plan for the future? After all, it's the future. It's going to be, and we haven't seen it yet. So how can we do that? We're a very realistic show. We don't do a lot of theory. Theory is nice, and we talk about theory sometimes, but only how it pertains to the real world and what needs to be done, because we're practical people, and we're really out there in the real world leading real-life groups and participants towards a successful outcome, towards what they want to achieve, and we want to know how to plan for that. How we can plan for our future success. Yes. Mm-hmm. So how can we do that? How do we plan for the future? Thank you. Thank you all for being here. I see we have lots of participation. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. You know, this is very true, and a lot of people are saying this. Janai and others are saying that we plan for the future by projecting from the present. And that's so true. We plan for the future by projecting from the present. And that's the main thing we do, isn't it? Because we know what's going on now, and we know what went on in the past. And so we take those two pieces of information, and we project forward into what the future will look like. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we use what we know to make a prediction, to make a plan for the unknown, which is about to be, for the future. Yeah. Pardon me. And we're getting a lot of agreement on that because that's a real realistic and a real practical way of thinking about it. Thank you. A lot of people are saying what Zoe is saying, and a lot of people are mentioning faith, that you plan for the future by having faith. Now, we've got all kinds of different faiths being talked about. And thank you for all of your participation. I'm just going to take a sip of water here. Excuse me. Shows it's a live show, doesn't it? It's kind of like, yay, my voice is going. But we plan for the future by having faith. And people are talking about faith in the sense of a religious faith. But also, mainly, it's faith in our abilities, right? By having faith in ourselves, by having faith that we can handle this, that we are right, that we are going to succeed. Yeah, by having faith, it's really confidence, isn't it? Yeah, people are using confidence and faith kind of in the same manner, and that's really true. By having confidence that we will reach our successful outcome, that we will reach the goal, that this is the time, this is the place, and we are the people, right? Yeah, by having faith, because if you don't have confidence, we talked about optimism, a few shows back. By the way, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. But we talked about confidence the other day. And it's really optimism and confidence that we're going to make it. Mm-hmm. And that's really how you plan for the future. You can't plan for the future if you don't have confidence that you're going to reach it. Don't have optimism that it's going to be, that you're really going to achieve it, that it's going to be, yeah, that it's going to be better. Good point. Optimism and faith and confidence that it will be better, that the future will be better than the past and the present. Because if everything was perfect, we wouldn't be working towards change, right? Yeah. Good point. I always say this show is not scripted, and it is not. It goes where it takes us. A lot of people are pointing out that sometimes you are working toward planning the future and working towards a goal, and the goal is not change. The goal is to protect the status quo. Good point. Because we think of working towards a goal as working towards change, right? And a successful outcome would be change for the future. But that's not necessarily true. Sometimes there is, your goal is to keep what you've got, that the present is good, and that you don't want the future to be a change, and some other group is working towards change, and your group is working towards preservation. Mm-hmm, yeah, good point. But the same rules apply about projecting from the present, and it's being pointed out from the past, good point, and by having faith, optimism, confidence, that the future will be the way you'd like it to be. Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to say that a lot of people are talking about how you can plan for the future by being optimistic, by having optimism that it's going to work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, for example, under that heading, Lindsay and others are saying that we plan for the future by always assuming good intentions. By always assuming good intentions. There's now a group that goes, well, yeah, you can assume good intentions if you'd like, but we're going the opposite way. You can assume bad intentions, that people are not dealing in good faith and like that. I suppose that's sometimes a realistic view, that the participants that you're dealing with are not, well, people are saying people of good character. I suppose if you have bad intentions, that's true. Sometimes you see a group, pardon me, and I have seen this occasionally, where you've got somebody who's people are calling him a spy and a ringer. You've got someone who has intentionally joined the group to try to derail it. Ever see that? Derail is an Americanism. It means to, you know how trains run on a track? It means to derail them, to throw them off the track, to harm the group, to make it go away, to cause it to dissolve, because they are on the other side, really. And they pretend to be on your side, but their goal to make you ineffective. Ever see that? I have. Yeah, a lot of you have. And that's bad intentions, right? Somebody has bad intentions. They've come not to be an active participant to make the group better, to make it go, but to cause the group not to go, to cause it to fail. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, yes, sometimes you have to think about that when you're planning for the future. You have to think about your participants and the people you're dealing with and whether or not they have the same goal in mind. And people are asking how you know about people's intentions. Well, you think about it, you watch their body language, you think about what they're saying and how they're acting in the group, right? And yeah, people are saying it becomes clear, yes, but the answer is you want to ferret this out. You want to know this before they take hold, before they get too far in, and before they really spy on you and report back what you're doing to their real group. Because that's the ultimate bad intention, right? They're kind of a spy in your group. Mm-hmm. And they're reporting back what you're planning to do and so that you can be blocked. I have actually seen that in corporate groups. Spies. And not... Yeah, that's a good point. That... Sometimes they're kind of subtle. Mm-hmm. So you have to watch. You have to make sure that you're dealing not with people of bad intention and they're not derailing. They're not like rumor mongering and causing factions and like that. The answer is that if you've got that, you take them aside. You want to know why they lie to you, but you can see that they're lying. They are not invited to the group because they are a disruptive participant. Yeah, people are asking how disruptive. I've never seen someone who was kind of bad intentioned. They're not, all right, I saw one once who was belligerent. And that's real obvious, right? Uncivil. Real obvious what to do. But usually they're more subtle than that and more insidious. Mm-hmm. And those you have to dismiss from the group with some tact because they've kind of wormed their way in and you don't want the other participants to feel a loss, right? Yeah. So I'm usually tactful, but I get rid of them. I do. They do not stay in my group more than one session, usually, because I can smell it. You know what a lot of people are saying, and this is really a very good idea. If you've got the kind of a group that is somewhat susceptible to that, and even especially if you think it might be susceptible, a lot of people are saying you should vet the participants. Which means you should kind of look them up, have them have a reference maybe to join the group. If I've got a group of participants and we are dealing with a controversial matter, for example, and somebody wants to join the group, because usually you don't get someone with bad intentions until your group is getting somewhere and you're having some success, right? Because you've come to the attention of the other, if you know what I mean. people would say, no, I don't know what you mean. You've come to the attention of other groups that are on the other side. And so they've sent someone, or someone is taking it upon themselves. But basically, you've got someone who's going to put a damper on your activities because you're getting somewhere. When I have a group that is susceptible to that, and even if I don't, sometimes I ask for this, and someone wants to join, I actually ask the present participants for recommendations. We don't just take outsiders, mm-hmm. Just complete strangers. The groups are not usually public. Now, sometimes I do a seminar, a workshop, that is open to the public in the sense that you buy a ticket. Is a fundraiser, for example, for something. And I'm the speaker, I'm the leader. and the people are not particularly vetted. It's just that you buy a ticket. That is different than a participant group where the participants are there because of their interest and voluntary, and they're really doing something. The ones where you have a ticket, sometimes you could get opposing groups buying a ticket, but that's a different act. That's a media act more than anything. Mm-hmm. They take pictures of themselves protesting and stuff. And I usually call a timeout, and we have a little discussion about appropriate behavior and the calling of authorities to make them leave. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And usually I advocate against that in a private group unless you absolutely must. Because I know, yes, thank you. I know that some of you are always saying, Ethan and others are always of the opinion that you should actually throw them out with security guards and police officers and things like that. I tend to try not to do that in a group that needs to participate together, but the public ones are different. The public ones where you have the public is invited, they bought in, the one-time thing, right? You ever see that? Yeah, like a charity event, exactly. A fundraiser, a charity event where there has been a ticket for, I don't know, $200. You get to come. And sometimes you get opposing viewpoints that have come to disrupt it, to kind of heckle. That, after you've talked to them and tried to reason with them, that may be a job indeed for eviction. Mm-hmm. Yeah, depending. I try to reason with them first and try to beat them down with not losing my temper and with reasoning with them and showing how idiotic they are. Mm-hmm. And that usually works because they usually are kind of idiotic, and they've been sent they're kind of boors. They've been sent just to be obnoxious. But if that, and usually I'm on the side of something that's really not real arguable, unless you're truly some sort of a bigot. I mean, like world peace, using mediation to get people to talk to each other. I mean, how bad is that? But sometimes you get people who want to have war. Ah, gee, the media can understand that this is not cool. And we do indeed ban videotaping of yourself doing stuff or anything. We ban photos and videos and like that at those public events. And therefore, it's easy to confiscate equipment, because what they really want to do is they want to social media their own cause of them yelling in a public place, right? Mm-mm-mm. This truly is call for eviction, and no, we won't be doing that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before the audience gets riled up and tries to yell the other side, because they really do. It's kind of like, no, we will not be accommodating that. Get out now. You have to decide it. Yeah. People are asking how you know when people are bad intentions and how you know when's the moment to throw them out. I can't tell you that. It has to do with experience. It has to do with, as you're standing there, a judgment call. I'm a little more quick, I am more quick to do it if it's just a media play, right? Because it's a public event, they've bought a ticket, and it's a media play. Sometimes I'm on a panel where you're on a panel that's moderated. If you are the moderator, it's your job to make that decision. If you are a panelist, it is usually, Well, I've only seen it when I'm a panelist, when I'm one of the people that's being talking. Usually that happens when you've got diverse opinions on the panel, and one of the panelists has kind of brought their group. Yeah, that's bad intentions on the part of the panelists, really, right? Yeah. But that's the job of the moderator, and the audience will help with that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I do help with it to bring the conversation around. Speaking of which, we're planning for the future and talking about attention, intention and planning and like that. And so that comes into play. See, we're going to bring the conversation around again. That comes into play. I wonder if we should have a whole show about intentions of the participants. Maybe we will. Yeah, people are voting for it. They go, yeah. That comes, the good or bad intentions of your participants comes into play with how you're going to plan for the future. Because if you've got bad intentioned people and you're planning for a successful future, I don't know how to say this any nicer. You've got to get rid of them. Because they've come not to be participants. They've come with the intention to derail you, to be a problem, to prevent you from reaching your goal. You need to get rid of them. That's all there is to it. They cannot be participants in your group because we can only have people with good intentions. Because quite frankly, good intentions are wonderful for planning the future. But, yeah, we're getting to the realistic part. Because you can have all the finest intentions in the world and be really good people and like that. Gotta have a plan. But you gotta have good intentions first. You have to really, the participants have to want the successful outcome. Or else your planning for the future will not make it, right? You've got to want to have optimism and confidence in the goal, faith. And you want to look at the present and the past so that we can see what to do in the future, right? Mm-hmm. And you want to have people who have good intentions because they will work towards the common goal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the bad intentions, man, you'll know it. You'll see it. And just in case you have taken it wrong, because sometimes people have kind of a, all right, yes, this is true. People are saying some people just have a miserable personality. And they seem always bad intentioned. And you know, you have seen people like that. They're just miserable by nature, but they really would like the future outcome. It's just that they're kind of, well, they're not people. You know, they're kind of people that don't play well with others, and they've kind of got a miserable personality, but they don't exactly have bad intentions towards this goal. And they will work towards it, and like that, and they have a, usually the people who are like that have not really joined the group voluntarily. Generally speaking, they have some sort of an interest that is obvious, usually an economic one. Mm-hmm. And you understand that they are the people that have the economic interest. They'll work towards the goal. They're not bad intentioned. They're just bad personalities. And they're not good team members because they're kind of, people are saying nasty. They're not real pleasant to work with, but you can see that they have a vested interest and they will push the goal forward. Mm-hmm. They're the kind of people that you might take aside during the timeout, right? And mention that politeness and that you understand that they have this interest, but we're going as fast as we can and that they need to accommodate the other people, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they don't realize it. They're just, They're just like that. They're just nasty pieces of work. That happens, but that's not bad intention. That's good intentions and kind of a cranky package. So we have people with good intentions. We're being optimistic. That's how we're going to plan for the future. Alan and others are saying that what you really need is tenacity if you're going to plan for the future. You need to not give up just because you've hit a little bump or it's not going as fast as you thought it would, or it's taking more work or the process is more complicated. No, you need tenacity. Yeah, you need to go, well, the future is so important that we're going to go forward, we're going to work on this, we're going to make it. Mm-hmm. We are going to keep going. We're going to keep working forward, and we're not going to get discouraged and just throw up our hands and go, phooey, and we're not making it. No, we're going to keep going forward and have tenacity. Mm-hmm. Carolyn and others are saying that tenacity is refusing to accept the present situation. Refusing to accept it. Even though it's been in place a really long time, I refuse to accept that this is how it's going to be. Refusing to accept the present situation. Well, that's really tenacity, isn't it? That's really working towards a goal. That's really saying, you know, this just isn't right. And we're not going to just accept it. We're going to work towards change. Yeah. Refusing to accept the present situation. Mm-hmm. Nikki and others are saying that that's really when you try to reach consensus. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you need some consensus to work towards the future. Because how are you going to make a plan if you can't decide what the future looks like? Yeah. That's setting a goal, really, right? You got to know what it is that you want the future to look like. Because how else are you going to plan for it? Yeah. So reaching consensus. This is what we're working towards. The more specific the consensus, the better your chances of reaching, of planning for the future and making it go. Better your chances of success. I like to make our goal as specific as possible, even if we have to break it down into steps, into specific steps, because the more direct you can see we're going, the better it will be. The more focused the group will be. You see, you can have a broad idea that the future should be more peaceful, right? And that's what Recipe for Peace Now advocates. But how? I mean, that's just a general idea that it would be nice if there weren't people that were shooting each other in the future. But that's too broad. You need to work it down in this specific group and this specific issue with this specific time frame and these specific circumstances. This is how we're going to get together and solve this problem. Right? Yeah. That's really the use of our principles and the use of mediation. So, reaching consensus. More specific the goal. And we reach consensus on the goal too, right? Yeah. The more success we'll have. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm going to say? We've got a lot of people in agreement. I'm going to say that this is being consensus builders. Mm-hmm. Marjorie and others are saying that you need to be consensus builders because as the leader, you're the one that leads towards consensus, right? You're the one that leads the group towards agreement. Very important. Yes, we're the most important people in the room. Mm-hmm. So how are we going to be consensus builders? How are we going to reach consensus on what we want for the future? Because the future is really achieving our goal, is what we want, right? So how are we going to reach that point? How are we going to make consensus so that we work together, go forward, understand our team, understand what we need to do, and do it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Matthew says by listening to all sides. Yes, whole bunch of you are writing the word listening. Yes, thank you. You've listened to this show before. Yay. Thank you for all of your participation and for being here. Yes, by listening. Because, you know, and I know that I've said this before, but it's true. That, and a lot of you are saying it, which is magnificent. That by listening to all sides, because a lot of times, the people in the room want the same ultimate goal for the future. They want the future to be like this. They want to have a success in changing something or in keeping something for the future. Mm-hmm. But the reasons they want it are different. Yeah. You know, we talked about sometimes people are not very charming in personality, mm-hmm. but they're in the group because they have a goal, a reason for the goal, a reason for the plan for the future. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's economic. Sometimes it is social justice. I mean, sometimes people are there because they think it would be a good idea for their city, for their world, for their organization. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people are there from an organization that wants something. You know, there's all kinds of different reasons for being in the room. And when we listen to them, they all work towards our consensus. Hmm? Yeah. Suki says that by being a consensus builder is getting diverse groups to work together. Yeah. You know, getting diverse groups to work together. The more people you can have who focus. You know the old expression, it may be an Americanism, and this is, of course, a global show, but you know the expression strength in numbers? The more people who are working towards a better future, the more people who are, well, good point, yes, people are saying strength in numbers is particularly good for fundraising. Yeah, the more people who can raise funds, pay. A lot of times that's one of our stumbling blocks, right? We don't have enough funding. And if you get together diverse groups and they work together, the process will be helped. It will go faster. It will go better. You'll attract more attention for your cause. And attention is a good thing. It really is. And also, if you've got a bunch of diverse groups working towards the same future, a lot of times it would be better if they talk to each other and work together because you'd keep going forward. They're all reinventing the wheel, yeah? They're all doing the same things to get to the same point, but if we march together, we would start from the next point in the process and the next step in the process and not have to always start from the first step. You see what I mean? You would be able to go faster and more efficiently. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's really an efficiency statement. Mm-hmm. In addition to having, you know, strength in numbers is always good for media attention and if you're working towards something a politician needs to do. Mm-hmm. Even if, now it is true that I'm in the United States and therefore we vote for everybody. And politicians are very aware of the sentiment of their voters. Mm-hmm. If they're smart. Because if the sentiment is against them, let's just say they're going to lose their job. And so, in a sense, if you have more strength in numbers, more people wanting something, your elected officials will be prone to listen, right? Because for every activist, for every person that participates in a group and every leader that participates in a group and every group that gets together with other groups, the politicians know that the citizens are listening and thinking and watching. They may not be participating actively, but they want to know what you think about it, Mr. or Miss Politician. Yeah. And that'll sway votes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, there's a very good example of that in the United States about reaching consensus and getting diverse groups to act together and listening to all sides, especially the diverse groups to act together. In the United States for, well, pretty much forever. No, for many, many, many years, marijuana has been illegal. Mm-hmm. It is a felony, but you can go to jail for dealing marijuana and for having marijuana on you. It is absolutely, positively illegal by federal law, federal being the top type of law, the highest. The citizens, and remember that we have lots of local politicians, we have states, cities, counties, and like that. But state is underneath federal. The citizens of various states have gotten together diverse organizations because they had different reasons for wanting marijuana to be legal. Well, we started with medical purposes. People needed marijuana. Marijuana is good for a lot of different kinds of ailments. It started out with the HIV positive people. Now, this is a niche group that is a certain type of person and also a people that have a certain disease, a certain ailment. The groups were diverse. You had all kinds of different kinds of groups, even within there. You had all kinds of people with sexual preference, all kinds of people who had contracted the HIV and AIDS due to non-sexual acts. You had, you had child advocacy groups. I mean, all kinds. They were very diverse. And they wanted it for very diverse reasons. And then other groups with other ailments, like something as diverse as glaucoma, as nerve damage, things like that, also said, you know, it would be really good if we could have legal marijuana because we are needing to search it out for relief, and we're taking a chance, and we are dealing with, how shall I put this delicately? No, not dirty words. We are dealing with less than reputable people. We don't know what it is we're buying in the baggie, right? Right, yes. And we're taking a chance. This is bad. And so the groups got together and they wanted an unusual goal, an unusual future. They wanted a future where they could have access to regulated, clean, they knew what it was. You know what I mean? It was, you knew what was in the package, actually labeled and everything. Legal marijuana in their state, even though it remained technically federally illegal. What a goal. What a vision for the future. Wow. It took some doing. But, you know, they got together, diverse groups. They listened to all sides. They found out that they all had the same goal in mind. Yes, economic also. You got growers and distributors and shops and people that wanted to make money off of it. There's big money in it. Yeah, it's a business. I mean, it's a growth. You grow all kinds of it, and you have to process it. Lots of jobs, lots of economics. I mean, yeah, there's a tremendous economic interest. Yes, and the states want a tax. Don't know if they tax the medical or not in my state. Probably in other states they do. But they refuse to accept the present situation because they wanted to change it for the future. They had confidence and faith and optimism. And some funding. Don't forget the funding. That was the business people. Mm-hmm. And they projected from the past and the present into the future. Mm-hmm. That it would be a good thing, right? They did all the things we're talking about. They reached consensus. Mm-hmm. They wanted the same outcome for different reasons. And they had a tremendous amount of tenacity. Mm-hmm. Kept going. Because it seemed kind of like, really? They're never going to do that. It's still federally illegal to this day. On the state level, and not in all states, because it started out smallish, one state at a time. And you know, in the United States, we're a very big country, and we're divided into states, and the states, some of them vote more liberally than others. They're more populist usually, and they have a more diverse population because they have more cosmopolitan cities. Mm-hmm. And even in states that don't now, one by one, big push. The push was made first in the states that seemed the most likely. Mm-hmm. California, Washington, like that. And then the advocates, the groups that are now tenacious and big, work towards getting other states. Because other people look at it and they go, you know, that's a really good thing. And you're still not supposed to, because there's the federal law, right? You're still not supposed to cross over out of your state into another state to use a medical marijuana in that state, right? And so other states are going, you know, that's a good idea. And how come these groups are being successful and planning for the future? First of all, they see success elsewhere. The first group is always the hardest. The first state is always the hardest. It had to go on a ballot, right? It not only had to go on a ballot to be voted for by majority in the entire state, but it had to go, it had to have advertising and things. There was media, mm-hmm, and advocates, and they really got the vote out. And so, but look at that. Even though it's still federally illegal, planned for the future, did all of the things that we're talking about, and medical marijuana is legal in quite a few states. Mm-hmm. Actual shops where you go, you get a medical card, and you go and you can buy a prescription, essentially speaking, of something that is a controlled substance under federal law, because there was strength in numbers, there was plans for the future, tremendous amount of tenacity, mm-hmm, and one by one, people are saying, you know, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. And all the naysayers, oh, they said there'd be all kinds of crime and stuff like that if marijuana was legal. Not really. Mm-hmm. Yeah, people are saying that's kind of ridiculous because it makes you mellow. But, yeah, it's – and now this is true, yes. Those of you who have followed it, and now there's some states that are trying for recreational legal marijuana, even though that's still illegal under federal law. And eventually, federal law, if there is enough of a groundswell, because the federal government moves slowly, the state government and the county governments are more attuned to the people because they're closer and the people watch them closer, right? The federal's kind of out there, but each state sends representatives that are part of the federal government, right? And this president of the United States, President Obama, has already bowed to public opinion and the power of the states and said that although federal law prohibits and criminalizes marijuana, that the government will not prosecute for it, the federal government. Now, it's not making it illegal exactly, but look at the power of planning for the future and the power of getting a group to reach consensus and a goal and the power of getting diverse groups to go in with the future. and the power of strength in numbers and of focus and tenacity. I mean, wow, that's really something. And it was started by a small group of people, and one of the big advocates was a celebrity, which kind of helps. Yeah. And so that helps start it, but you got to have the diverse groups had to come together and reach consensus and understand that that was their goal and how to go step by step to achieve it. Yes. Isn't that wonderful? Yeah. So that's really what we're talking about, the power of the group, the power of planning for the future. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how are we going to do this? Now that we've talked about other people doing it, how are we going to form a realistic and practical plan? How are we going to get this done? How are we going to do it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Several people, Joan and others, are using an old expression that is actually, I suppose, good, but it's hope for the best, but plan for the worst. Hope for the best, plan for the worst. The theory being is that you work towards the successful goal, but you have kind of a plan B in case you have to take a step back and then take another step forward, so that you're not ended, right? Hope for the best, plan for the worst. Well, you know, it's a concept, and I don't know that it's a bad idea. Because it's good to be extremely optimistic when you plan for the future, but you got to be realistic too, right? Yeah. Freddie and others are pointing out, and this is, of course, one of my favorite things that we talk about, is that you examine mistakes that were made so you don't repeat them. As a practical matter, how do we plan for the future? We look at the past, and we look at the mistakes that were made, and you don't repeat them because you've seen them. You don't accidentally do it again. And, you know, really, it's not just our mistakes, right? You know, with the Internet, it's easy to look at other groups. It's easy to see, to analyze, how come they tried to get this future to be and it didn't work out? Yeah. It's like the marijuana ones. Marijuana, people wanted it to be legal forever. I mean, since the 60s, as soon as it became illegal, I don't remember how, I wasn't part of it, so I don't know how it became illegal. It was kind of in with every other kind of drug. And, I mean, there were people in the government who thought it was a stupid idea. There were police chiefs who thought it was a stupid idea. There's a post in the United States that is federal called Surgeon General. They're kind of a health overseer for the country. There were surgeon generals who thought it was a stupid idea and it should be legalized. But it wasn't until everyone got together, the groups got together, and they looked at how come it hadn't been successfully legalized and how come it had gone illegal in the first place. They looked at the past to plan the present for the future. Yeah. So you examine mistakes so you don't repeat them. And it's not even your own mistakes, because you might be a new group and you haven't made any mistakes yet. But you want to see how come it didn't work when this group was trying it, for example. How come it wasn't successful? What happened? Why didn't it work out? What should they have done? And you know, it's interesting and educational, and it starts you out on a better track, because you might think, oh, this is how to do it. Wait a minute, that's been tried. That didn't work. How come it didn't work? And with the Internet, it's easy to gain access to information like that. It's easy to see, for example, the media that was done at the time. and what the opposing today, thing like marijuana legalization was just an idea. This time has come, even though it's federally illegal. There's a tremendous amount of push on the other side. Yeah, there's always groups on the other side. Yes, I know. People are saying, I have a bias towards legalizing marijuana. I do. I think it's a real good idea and that you should tax it, you should regulate it, and that you should allow people to have access to clean. I think that about a lot of things, and sometimes a time has come, but that doesn't mean there's not a tremendous amount of opposition. You'd be surprised the amount of opposition. Yeah. And you'd be surprised how they're working towards the opposite future, right? They don't like it. They don't want it. They think it's a really bad idea. I'm biased, so I think that their reasoning is flawed. But you know, there's a lot of people on their side too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that there's always two sides to everything. And one of the mistakes that people often make that you shouldn't repeat is to not take the other side seriously. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very good, yeah, people are saying that happens. Exactly. You go, well, that's ridiculous. No, not. They've got funding, they've got process, they've got focus and tenacity, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, people are bringing up other things that are, especially in the United States, that are still contentious after many, 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 many years. One of them being abortion. It's a real good case in point. Yeah. So you don't want to repeat mistakes, and you don't want to, as Ethan and others are saying, you don't want to underestimate the other side. Don't want to underestimate them. That's a mistake that people make, right? They underestimated the opposition. Yeah. And that's real. That's a real good point. Don't want to underestimate them. They're you on the other side. Organized, tenacious, have faith, planning for the future, focused. Hey, they've got it too. So you have to watch. You have to do, and and there you have the bad intentions. You have to make sure that you don't have that you're not being undermined because of someone in the group. Mm-hmm, yeah. So that's real important. To watch out for mistakes and not repeat them. And look at what other people did who failed. I sometimes think failure is more instructive than success because it tells us what not to do and where to start from. Rihama and others are saying that we need to welcome advice and expert opinions. Yeah? Yeah. We need to ask. A lot of times our participants have an expertise that they bring to the table, which is magnificent. A lot of times we need to ask for expert advice. The people are saying that the main experts are the ones who are still interested in the outcome, but they were in a group that didn't make it. You could ask them advice. Mm-hmm. Ask them, well, you have to be polite, of course, because you don't want to say, how come you didn't make it? But, you know, that's essentially the question that you want to ask them. Do you have advice for us going forward? And would you like to join with us again because you have experience? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of times, I do that all the time. A lot of times people really would like to try again with a different group, and they bring expertise to the table. And sometimes, not our groups, of course, sometimes they were just inexperienced, and that's why, or they ran out of funding, or they ran out of time and they couldn't get the group back together. For example, a thing like marijuana needs to go on a ballot. And in order to get on a ballot, you need to get a whole ton of signatures. There's all kind of rules. And there are deadlines and things. And sometimes a group failed because they couldn't get organized fast enough, right? But they have expertise. They have expertise on what needs to be done and how to do the process better. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a really good point, too. We're running out of time again. This is such a wonderful discussion. Thank you so much, all of you, for being here. And yes, I know I'm not going to get to the recipes again. But, you know, it's because we have such a wonderful discussion. I'll really try to make it next week with the recipes. I know some of you go, you know, you don't do timing on your show well. You don't get your recipes. And this is true. But if we have such an important conversation, it seems so important that yeah, I don't get to them. This is true. We've got like 4 minutes and we're not going to make it. So Casey and others are saying that in order to analyze mistakes and analyze what not to repeat, and also to plan for the future and go forward, the thing to analyze is not only what other people tried that went wrong, but you analyze why the present situation exists. Very important. How come this is like that? Mm-hmm. How come we have to move towards the present and we have to change something? Why was this put in place in the first place? Why does the present situation exist? What was the purpose? Did nobody think of this? Has something changed? Mm-hmm. In this world, the things that are oftentimes being discussed, and I've got several groups going of this type, is privacy, right? Because the thing that has changed is technology, right? A lot of rules, a lot of regulations, a lot of laws, a lot of way things are being done were made in a time before technology was so pervasive and so strong, so easy, so available to people with bad intentions. Yeah. And so that's very important. And that's really where I'm working now is in privacy. People are having mediate groups that are talking about that, all kinds of diverse groups who have the same need for different reasons. So that's something. Why does the present situation exist? Well, sometimes it's because the rules haven't caught up with the world, right? Or sometimes it's because some strong opposition was in place. Is it still there? Why does the present situation exist? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of people are talking about using unbiased research because sometimes you see something that's on your side and you're so happy that you stop. And that's why we don't have one person doing it. We work in teams, right, to research and to think about things. And you can't just bring what agrees with you to the table. You have to know what doesn't agree with you too. And you have to think about, well, why is it that research says this and this research says that? And you go further and see, you dig deep. Yeah, and that's where you get the expert opinions, exactly. And you welcome advice. Mm-hmm. And you know, this is a really good sentence, and then I'm going to wish you all a lovely week, and we'll get together again. Paul and others are saying that the key is to learn from mistakes and look at the research and look at what needs to be done and look at the opposition and learn and ask for advice and be tenacious and not be paralyzed. Because sometimes you do all these things and the participants freak out and they go, oh, it's more complicated than I thought. Wow, I don't think we can do this. Yes, you can. This is a learning experience, a discussion experience, a listening experience, a consensus-building experience, and a consensus to work and plan towards a future that, in our group's opinion, will be a better place. And we need to go into workable steps so that we don't get paralyzed. because sometimes it seems big, and sometimes it is big. We're not saying it isn't, but we need to take 3 deep breaths, work it into workable steps in the process, and get together with others. Yes. And on that note, thank you all for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to contact us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. You'd like to hear prior shows? They are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for all of your ideas. Thank you for listening. And come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.